Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 10th of March, Anno Domini 2012, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't drink the booze. It's time for stuff that isn't the blues. Listen, I want to thank all of our friends who came out to the pancake breakfast, which has just, it's running for another hour.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in the studio doing what are we doing? It's only sound bites. But I want to thank all those people. We're a little jacked up on
syrup.
On coffee and syrup, exactly. So it'll be an interesting show. But thank you all for coming out. It's great to see all our friends and all our fans, and we'll do it again next year. It was great.
I was just saying, because I'm glad we're in here, because right now I think I smell nothing but like the sausage and pancakes that I've been swinging all morning.
I know it. We're going to my daughter's birthday party a little later. I better take a shower. I'm going to just smell like pancake syrup the whole time. All right, our news stories. Let's start with the Apple. Something happened at Apple. Oh, yeah, Apple re-announced the iPad this week. I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Apple announced the new and totally different... No, I can't do it. There are some very nifty things in the new iPad, actually.
It's resolutionary.
Right.
That's their slogan.
That's about it.
The screen is much better at 264 pixels per inch, which is still short of the iPhone's 330 pixels per inch. It's bigger, but with fewer pixels, version of the Retina display on the iPhone. The new graphics chip offers twice the graphics punch as the old one, simply by adding another graphics core. It supports LTE networks, it has a nicer camera, and a dictation mode, but no Siri. You'll be able to buy it starting March 16th at prices ranging from $500 to $830, depending on how much RAM and what type of radio you want in it. Current iPad models will be bumped down in price while supplies last. Other additions include an improved 5-megapixel camera borrowed from the iPhone 4, a Siri-like dictation mode. Last year's iPad 2 will live on at a $100 discount. People are already grumbling that it doesn't look different enough or that it's not really cool enough or whatever. The fact is, folks, revolution comes rarely. The iPod was a revolution. Everything since then has been an evolution. Nothing wrong with that, but not every product, even from a company like Apple, has that game-changing flash of genius. Nevertheless, the new iPad, which, by the way, is neither the iPad 3 nor the iPad HD, it's just the new iPad, is a pretty nifty toy. Nifty enough for you, only you can decide. And so our question of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the new iPad? OMG, I must get it now. I've been saving my pennies for months. I'm not that impressed. And drat, I just bought an iPad too. When you're done making the poll choice, I know you'll have more to say because I know you people. So check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to a truly great website where you can enter your opinion. And the question, of course, there is, now that you've seen the announcement, what do you think of the new iPad? And, of course, that's our question to you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And before we go too far, let me remind you, for those of you who have any device that is not going to sync itself over the internet, it is daylight savings time coming up, so you'll be jumping ahead, springing forward. Set your clock ahead an hour sometime around 2 a.m. Or if it's in your computer, theoretically it'll do it for you.
Remember that old bug in, was it Windows 95? When daylight saving time started,
feature
that at 2 o'clock it went back to 1 and said, "Hey, daylight savings time." And you're thinking, "Oh, that's nice." Then at 2 o'clock, go, "Hey, daylight savings time," sets it back an hour.
Yep.
And then at 2 o'clock, "Hey, daylight savings time," sets it back an hour. You had to go past 2 o'clock so you could fix it. And only thus those geeky enough that were actually up at 2 a.m.
Right. Windows Live was down for most of Leap Day because it did not understand Leap Day.
Surprise.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the new machine is out, the new iPad. It really is a nifty device, but only you can decide, as I said, whether you think it's nifty enough to be selling your iPad 2. And
no, that's the good reason. You know, bring out another one. Now I can go get the iPad 2
at a lower price.
Exactly. And like they said, there's really no difference.
Yeah, I've been telling friends of mine who say, what should I do? I said, wait for the iPad 3 and then buy an iPad 2.
Yeah, the iPad 2.
That's what I'm doing.
iPad 2 16 gig models are staying in the product line at $399. So they dropped $100 and are going to stay at that configuration.
Now, can you put an SD card in those?
No.
There's an SD adapter that lets you put an SD card in.
You know, I'm still,
but it hangs off the bottom.
I'm still looking at,
but you use
whether
the cloud
go
for
the
that.
The iPad or just go with an Android tablet.
Right.
Android tablets, like you say, since they got the 3 out now, and dropping the 2s, I think the Android tablets are going to come down a little bit too.
Well,
you can get the SD cards.
Right. I have one now. I can with a mini SD card and a 32 gig SD card. Easy enough. It holds
you can
pretty
put
much
some
everything I need.
Music, work, documents, and photos, and still have room to spare.
Yep. And they are less expensive. And we're seeing a lot of people looking at that as an option. It's interesting to see the reactions. Beforehand, I have a bunch of friends who were Apple fanatics, and they're very happy with their Apple products, but they were really, 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 really excited at every introduction of every new product, and this time they seemed a little disappointed because it not only didn't look different, it didn't even have a new name.
And all the rumors got everything right.
The rumors got everything right, but people kept saying, "Well, that can't be all there is."
When I was hearing the rumors about the Retina display, I didn't quite believe it because I thought it would be too expensive to keep the $499 price. So then the rumors came out that it's going to be $100 more than it used to be, and that makes sense, but that's annoying too.
Well, why are they calling it just the iPad? Isn't it technically still the iPad 3?
It's the third generation iPad, so it's a marketing issue. When people come in and want to buy the iPad,
tomato.
They usually say, we've run into the same thing with iMac. The iMac name has been around since 1998, and every computer has just been called the iMac. But from the service side of it, they all parenthetically have some differentiator so that we know which iMac it is, so that we know what parts it needs.
Yeah, but you guys, this should be less confusing because you're making less iMacs. I mean,
there's only like 40 models of iMac.
Yeah, but back in the day, you'd sit there and say, oh, guess what? Apple, latest model coming out this week.
Yeah,
and we'd sit there, now it's, you don't even.
Before the iMac, Apple's product names were all the numbers that were typical in the PC world. I had a Power Mac 6166.
I remember when you brought that cube in. Cube.
The cube, that was one of the first ones that just was the cube. It didn't have a big fancy number after it.
But still, no, you're not doing the rollouts like you used to. I mean, they're all geared towards the iPads, iPhones.
The computers are coming out about once a year as hardware gets upgraded, and it isn't as big a deal anymore. And it was one of the big things that Tim Cook was saying at the announcement this week is the post-PC era. More and more people are using mobile devices, smartphones and tablets, and the role of the traditional PC is kind of diminishing.
Well, that's where we got into the discussion last week, is, the tablets taking over for the laptops.
Yep.
To be able to just take, and even the tablets doing it wirelessly, take it back to my PC, hook it up,
cloud syncing. You don't need to hook them up anymore.
Transfer it back and forth, and that's where the Android tablet is looking better. Like you said, excuse me. If I can put a 32 smart card in there, macro smart card, slide it in, I can transfer all the data I want and carry it around with me, and I got everything. It's smaller, thinner.
There's really two things that I like better about Android, and one is the Asus Transformer has a real keyboard with it. So it's kind of a laptop where the screen lifts up and it's a pad. So when I want to actually write something, I can easily. But the other thing I like about every Android device is a product called AirDroid, where I start AirDroid, it tells me what the URL is, what the IP address is, and it gives me a password. So I type in, so I go to my browser and I put in that IP address and the password, and suddenly I'm controlling my Android device from my browser. So I move everything over wirelessly now. I can install stuff. I can copy music over. I can copy pictures I've taken back. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to plug it into anything anywhere ever.
And it's you're good to go.
Yep. And you're good to go.
Similar program for the iPad called AirDrop.
Oh, is there?
And I use two or three different versions that I've seen over the years for basically the same thing. It uses the web server built into your computer, or the web server that you get on the mobile device and share files back and forth.
It actually starts a web server on the device.
Yep.
All right. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like our friend Linda did from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Okay. On my iPad, I go into the App Store. Now, my wireless network is all set up and all that, and I've got, you know, no problems. But every once in a while, it'll say, you do not have a secure connection. Check your date and time setting. Well, my date and time setting never changes. But if I go in and just play with it, like turn it off and turn it back on, it works fine. But I never change the setting. Why is that happening?
A secure network connection is when it encrypts the data so that the stuff you buy on the store is encrypted and nobody can sneak into it. There are reasons why occasionally that it's called SSL, why that SSL fails. And often it's because your date and time is wrong. What may be happening is, do you charge your iPad all the time, or do you let the battery drain completely before you charge it again?
No, I don't. Am I supposed to do that?
Well, it's six one half dozen the other, but the problem can happen is if you let the battery drain completely, then the clock can sometimes zero.
Oh, no.
Because the battery's dead.
I get maybe to 55-60%, and then I charge it again.
Yeah, that's fine. But sometimes the clock can zero, and then it can't make that SSL connection, but as soon as it's on the internet, the clock will fix itself.
Yeah.
So you may not notice the clock has changed.
Yeah, that is so weird.
Yeah.
Sometimes what I have found also is that when I open the iPad, it can take a few seconds to make a network connection.
And it still may think it was an hour ago from when you put it to sleep.
Right. So what I always make sure I do is whenever I turn on my iPad, I always wait 10 or 12 seconds before I do anything with it. And I know there's that destroys your whole idea of instant on and always available and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, yeah.
But the reality is that sometimes if you start it right up and go to the App Store, it's not correctly connected. It seems to think it is, but it's not, and now it's all screwed up. But if you waited another, say, 10 seconds, mostly that goes away.
Okay, then that follows another question. Okay, I'm on a web page, okay?
Yep.
And I want to scroll up and down. Sometimes, for maybe a split second or so, I cannot scroll up or down, and then all of a sudden I can.
That often happens because the page isn't finished loading yet, and so the scrolling isn't available because it's still trying to load the page. I'll sometimes see that if I try to scroll down a long page, like a blog, I'll scroll down and it's blank, and then there's nothing there to scroll through until the page finishes loading.
Yeah, so there's nothing wrong with the iPad. It's just
slow network, and that's not your fault. Generally speaking, that's probably somewhere out there in the internet,
or pages that are too complicated. I read a lot of blogs, you know, like Boing Boing and whatnot, right. and it may scroll down 10 or 20 pages before it goes to another page, and it takes a very long time to load all that text and graphics and ads.
Yeah,
I almost wish
the ads.
Yeah, I wish more blogs would cut it down to one or two screens so that you don't have to scroll forever.
Well, that's how they make their money.
I hear complaints about that too, that you put a 10 photo slideshow and it's on 10 different pages because now they get 10 page views.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, but it was so funny. I watched the Apple conference on my iPad. And for the new iPad coming out, and I'm thinking to myself, mine is just as good. I don't need all that stuff. But, you know, And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, now they got an iPad 3. I'm very happy with this. Yep. Who to me, if I don't know about you guys, I don't need a 5-megapixel camera.
Yeah, if you have an iPad 2, there probably isn't any big reason to get a 3.
No.
But if you still have a 1, then
I've got the 2. Yeah. I got it for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, why would I, you know, and they said, well, you could sell your iPad 2 for this price and get this. I go, no.
Right.
Yep.
So that's the whole reason the automobile industry.
I just have to be patient.
And that's the whole reason the automobile industry brought out model years, so that you would buy a new car. And it's the same thing with computers.
But I mean, as far as my iPad, nothing is wrong with it. I just have to be patient.
Yep.
Yep. Sounds like it.
It sounds like it. Thanks, Linda.
Okay, bye.
Have fun. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, all the folks still listening over in the Pancake Breakfast, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and we are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I can dig out all kinds of music.
Good music. Yep, it's all there.
Tapped into the library now.
Yep.
Ooh.
In response to recent widespread criticism, to put it mildly, AT&T announced Thursday that it will simplify elements of its throttling policy for unlimited data plan subscribers. All unlimited data plan users who exceed 3 gigabytes of data in a single month will now experience reduced speeds on AT&T's 3G network for the remainder of their billing cycles. 4G subscribers, meanwhile, can use up to 5 gigabytes of data in a billing period, after which data speeds will be throttled. AT&T notes that users of the unlimited plan can still use as much data as they like, just at lower speeds. Customers on tiered plans are obviously not affected by these changes, because if you go over, you get charged more. Before, the top 5% of unlimited data plan subscribers in a region were subject to throttling, a subjective sliding scale that throttled users even if they were only using a meager 1 gig or 3 gig of data in a month.
If you happen to be in the top 5%.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Of that region. And they couldn't. And they weren't going to tell you, whatever. Many felt AT&T was using bullying tactics to push. Let me try that again. Many felt AT&T was using bullying tactics to push unlimited subscribers into switching to a tiered data plan. Indeed, under the old policy, customers on the verge of throttling were sent a simple text message. Your data use this month places you in the top 5% of users. Use Wi-Fi to help avoid reduced speeds. The message ends with a link to information on AT&T's tiered pricing schemes. A number of people receiving this message weren't even trafficking immense amounts of data. They were using amounts similar to those on tiered plans, that is, under 3 gigabytes, and wondered why their data speeds should be reduced. The unlimited data plan and 3G tiered plan are both priced at $30. Here's how AT&T's new policy works, according to the carrier's updated support page. If you have a smartphone that works on our 3G or 4G network and still have an unlimited data plan, God bless you. Oh, no. You'll receive a text message.
Please stop.
Yeah, please stop. You'll receive a text message when your usage approaches 3 gigs in one billing cycle.
Well, they do that now.
Was when you hit your 5%. Now it's a hard 3 gig.
Oh, because I got 2 gig.
Well, this is on the unlimited plan. Unlimited now means 3 gigs.
Oh, okay.
Right. So it used to be when you hit the top 5%, which in your area could be 1 gig.
All right.
So you never knew when you would get that notice.
Right.
When you would be throttled. Now they do not throttle you before 3 gig, and they send you a notice before they throttle you.
Okay.
So it's slightly different. And, of course, if you're on 4G LTE, it's 5 gig of data rather than 3 gig. So it's a little bit better. Anyway, our question to you, how do you feel about your AT&T data plan? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Of course, if you're an iPad new user, and you're on the 3G plan, half of a high-res picture or a quarter of a high-res movie will blow your data plan for the month.
One of the things that Apple did announce, the iTunes Store is now providing HD movies at 1080p. They have tweaked the compression, the H.264 compression they're using, so the files aren't four times bigger than the SD that the math would show you.
Yeah.
They're still the HD movies are still a little over a gig an hour, which is pretty good. The other weird thing to the carrier issue, the new iPad has a hotspot feature. So if you have the cellular iPad, you can turn on a hotspot and then access the internet from your computer or your non-cellular device. Under Verizon's cellular iPad, that feature is free and no additional charge. Under AT&T, they do not offer that feature, period.
Nice. Very, very nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Yeah, good afternoon.
It is.
I'm running Windows XP Home, and the situation is I cannot receive 90.1 on my computer. I can receive other radio stations around the country, but jazz I cannot get. I have my son installed VLC, and I'm wondering if that could be blocking to receive the station.
What program are you using to try to receive it with?
Internet Explorer.
It's an MP3 stream. You need to use an MP3 program like iTunes or
does VLC.
VLC does MP3 streams? Okay.
MP3 stream?
Yeah.
Yeah, what happens is...
it's a .m3u file that you open in an MP3 streamer.
Right. Okay, so when I click on receive high speed and it comes back and says, do you want to open this? And I said, yes. And it keeps going back to the same thing again. I'm wondering, maybe the VLC is blocking it.
It should use VLC to open that stream.
Okay.
Well,
but it won't open. That's the problem.
I can't get to the Jazz 90.1 website.
What you can try doing is if you right click on the click here to listen, that gives you the URL of the stream, and then open VLC yourself. And inside VLC, there's an open location command,
okay,
which will then open that stream directly.
Okay. I can try that.
So it sounds like the file association tables in Internet Explorer might be messed up. It's picking the wrong program to open that stream with.
Right. So what you, as Steve said, right-click on click here to listen via high speed, and you get a URL. Or you can just download the file. It's the jazz901stream.m3u.
.m3u.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then open.
And then you can open that with VLC.
Right. VLC. There's an open network command.
Okay.
And let me see if that actually works. And
you can do it as open network, or you can just do it as open.
It works.
Downloaded the MP3.
And I saw the number increase on the stream computer.
There you go. If you just open it as a file, that works still.
All right. I'll give that a try.
Okie doke.
All right, thank you much.
And then actually, once you have that file on your computer, you could right-click on it and choose the open with, pick VLC, and say always open with. So any other time you download that M3U stream, it will use VLC, and that should fix Internet Explorer's file helper table.
Right. I use VLC for most things. It seems lighter than a lot of other things, and it opens an awful lot of different types of streams, so I like it a lot. All right, our next caller is Joe, also from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Joe. What do you know?
Not much. That's why I'm calling you guys. My question is directed towards my laptop computer, and I want to know if you guys know if there's a way, when I'm reading a statement of a web page or whatever, if I'm reading something, is there a way for me to mark on that page where I left off so that when I log off I can go right back to that sentence or not?
What operating system and
what browser?
Yeah.
That I don't know.
Well, what operating system are you using? Windows?
Windows, Mac, Linux?
I'm on Windows 7, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then which browser? Internet Explorer, Firefox, Chrome?
I'm on Explorer.
Okay. Generally, no. You can bookmark a page.
Mm-hmm.
there's HTML code that you can create a bookmark in a page, but that has to be coded ahead of time.
Okay, would I be able to do that if you guys tell me the code I use?
You have to change the code on the page you're looking at, so the other end has to change it.
Yeah. What format are you using, did you say again?
He's just reading web pages in IE.
Oh, okay.
Whatever type of program I'm in, when I'm reading a story or whatever, I just want to know an easy way for me to go back to that sentence that I left off on when I close the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to it, how I can go right to that sentence.
Yeah, the only thing I know you can do is bookmark that page.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to, there's nothing you can do in Internet Explorer. If you were using Firefox, there's an add-on called Hyper Anchor.
Oh, yeah?
Well, and that essentially does what you want it to do. You're reading a long page. You set a Hyper Anchor, and you save that as if it were a regular bookmark.
Yeah.
And then you can go back to it, and it not only takes you to the page, but the place in the page.
Yeah, but what I've got, I can't do that, right?
Not with Internet Explorer, but there's nothing I know of that does it with Internet Explorer. No.
But you could download Firefox and use that
Firefox
instead.
Yeah.
Well, there's just one thing I found out what I could do a couple of days ago is where I stop reading that sentence, I scroll that page to the very top of the screen, which means that's where I want to continue reading once I shut my computer off. And what I do is I just close my computer. I don't log off. I just close it. And then I found out by mistake that when I open that computer again, I click on my username, which appears in the middle of the screen, and it'll take me right there to that sentence at the top of my screen.
Yeah, it's remembering the last page you had open. That's built into the browsers.
But remembering, it's not closing it down.
Right. Remembering the last sentence you were on down the page is not part of the browser.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing quicker, simpler, or easier for me to do than what I'm doing.
Not an Internet Explorer.
Not an Internet Explorer.
Absolutely not.
But if you download Firefox, then you can install this Hyper Anchor and then set.
Yeah, regardless of Firefox, I'm just wondering, like I say, there's nothing I can do for myself with the system I'm on and I've got.
Right.
Right.
Nothing you can do in Internet Explorer.
Right.
Absolutely correct.
You can easily add Firefox and then do it there.
Yeah. Okay, guys. I want to tell you I enjoy your show very much. You're very helpful.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Yep. And if anyone in the chat room knows a way to do that, let us know.
Yeah, I don't know of any way to do it in Internet Explorer. You need some sort of add-on. I don't know of one for IE. I don't even know of one for Chrome. I know Hyper Anchor works for Mozilla.
We were just talking about this earlier. A lot of websites do very short lengths on the site, so you have to click next, next, next to go get through pages.
Right.
And that way you could bookmark a specific page. But if it's one page that goes down for 20 or 30 screens, then that doesn't work as well.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
I call him because I don't know.
Okay.
Listen, I'm running XP.
Yep.
And I have Roadrunner, but I use AOL for my emails. And when I send emails to some of my older friends, they can't read because there's a 10-pike for the print. Is there any way I can move that to 12 automatically?
When you send an email message, they're getting it and it's too small for them to read?
Yes.
Okay.
And it says 10 up there by the... the little code would tell me the type of print.
And you're using AOL as your email?
Yes, sir.
Program.
There may be a default.
Yeah,
look through the AOL preferences. There may be a default message size. They can always change it at the other end, too.
Yeah, they can just highlight it and make it as big as they want.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
But you can.
Hold on.
You can, in fact, change the defaults in AOL on the web, and the way you do that is in the settings link.
Yeah, are you using the AOL standalone program or the AOL website?
I'm using AOL 9.7.
The standalone program, yeah. So it would be preferences in there.
Right.
Where would I find it?
Usually in the edit menu, sometimes called options.
Well, I got edit to file, community services, favorites, settings.
Yeah, in,
settings.
Yep.
There it is.
And then somewhere in there, there should be
There's a compose category, and then you can pick your font, the font size, and the color inside a section called default font and color. And then click save, and then you'll have a bigger font and whatever color you want, whatever size font you want.
Marvelous.
There you go.
Thank you very much. God
Absolutely
bless you
our
all.
Our pleasure. And also
you.
Font too small. Sorry. Just keeping our log up to date. Yeah, it's the interesting thing always becomes the dichotomy between what you send and what people get. Because there is no uniformity in email programs, what I see as 12-point type, you will see probably still as 12-point type, but the size that it's actually visible will be much different. And don't forget, you can give us a call. It's real easy, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Dave's coming down from that sugar rush.
Oh,
should have had more syrup earlier.
I guess so, but getting up at, 10 to 6 this morning?
10 to 6? Piker, I got up at 5. My wife got up for market.
And you got up.
And there I was. Normally, I can sleep right through, but I knew I had to get up shortly after she did anyway. So when her alarm went off, I actually heard it and woke up and stumbled around the house like a zombie.
No, but it was a great turnout, though.
Yeah. It was great. I want to, again, thank all of our friends who came down to visit. It was great seeing them. We had a terrific time. We want to particularly thank the friends also of Polka, who were there in droves.
And they were dancing in the aisles again. The judge there, she was dancing.
I had a chance to dance with Jan Niffler, one of our DJs, but I don't dance like I used to. Although it was nice of her to ask me. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and me, Nick, and all of you. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we are talking to Jim from Greece, New York. What's up, Jim?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a Windows 7 question.
Yes.
Concerns the different versions. I bought a laptop in Thanksgiving time that came with Windows Home Premium. I looked up through the laptop. It said it was a 64-bit version of the Windows 7 system.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's others that I could upgrade to. Are there any benefits to upgrading to one of the more expensive versions as far as the core function or performance of Windows 7?
Yes, absolutely. If you upgrade to a more expensive version, Microsoft gets more of your money.
Yep. That's about it.
If you're in a work environment where you have a Microsoft network, then getting professional or above makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah, professional can join domains. Professional has RDP server built in. Professional has an XP mode where it can run older software easier. Professional has an advanced backup and restore program that we all think is a joke anyway, but it's there.
Yeah. It's advanced Microsoft backup and restore,
yeah.
So it backs up and restores nothing even faster.
And Well said. Which version do you have now, did you say?
The Home Premium.
Home Premium,
version.
Yeah. If you had Starter or Home Basic, then Home Premium does give you more things that people would use.
But if you're really at home and you don't have a network, a real Windows professional enterprise level network, then you don't need much of anything more than Home Premium.
Okay, great. It's a home computer. It's for my own personal use. And not only do I not have a Microsoft network, I don't even have the internet home. So
yep.
So I feel pretty comfortable about not picking up viruses that way. But
that's not bad, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just didn't know if there was anything I was missing in terms of upgrading to a one of the upper-level versions. And I
yes, you're missing losing money out of your wallet.
Yeah, making Bill Gates richer.
No, it's not him anymore.
Oh, he's still got to get some.
He's still probably
royalties.
Got 99% of the stock.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, you're good with what you got.
Okay, thank you. Would
sure.
it be possible to ask one other question?
It might be possible to ask it, sure. Yeah. I don't know if we'll answer it. No, go ahead. No.
Okay, well, as I mentioned, I didn't have the internet where I live, so I have no need for a router. I recently bought a Brother laser printer at a local store for a very good price, and I want to set it up to communicate with my laptop wirelessly in a, you know, peer-to-peer ad hoc network. And I've not done that before, so I was just wondering what my gotchas might be that I might run into.
It's a little trickier to set up without a router in the middle, but it's perfectly doable.
It is doable. Again, that would also be easier with professional because you could set up one of your systems as an AP. Don't know that Home Premium does that. But even without that, if you picked up a fairly inexpensive wireless router and just set it up and had those two machines talk to it, you'd be done awfully fast. And it's probably worth the $50 to $75 to just be done.
Okay. I'll go that way because I was leery of trying to set it up as a peer-to-peer network. And if I can pick up an inexpensive router and just do it that way and be done, I'll definitely do that.
There you go. Check it out.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right. Have fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a lot of times a lot of things are possible. Whether it's easily done for
home
users.
And you have
users,
to make the trade-off, right? I mean, you can spend 3 weeks getting it to work, or you can buy that inexpensive router and be done in an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, my thought is if you can afford it, and not everyone can, and I get that, but if you can afford it, buy the little thing and be done. That's the way to do it. All right, our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Good afternoon, fellas. I have about four USB hard drives to keep my backup on and some data on, and I'm thinking about getting a new computer, and my present computer isn't running what I call great. It does some strange things. Should I have these USBs checked for viruses?
Absolutely. What antivirus program are you running on your old machine?
McAfee.
And is it up to date?
It's automatically updated.
And you pay for that every year?
Yes.
Okay.
It's still a good idea to check now and then to make sure that it's still updating.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in addition, as we have said many times, there are viruses that don't even get released until they can beat McAfee. So downloading something else like Avast or AVG or Panda or one of those and running it against those USB drives, well, and against your hard drive as well, is not a bad idea, particularly the very last thing you do before you move those USB drives over to a new machine.
Okay. And when I take them in to get them done, should I take the cable along, or do they have their cable?
No, cables.
The power cord, probably, but usually not the data cable.
Right.
Well, these don't have any power cord.
Right, they just take it off the USB.
Right.
Yep.
You have any idea of roughly what that runs?
What, to scan them?
Yeah.
Not much. I mean, you know, depends on how many drives and how big they are. You know,
how long it takes. You could do it yourself if you wanted to.
Where do you think you're going
to
take it? You don't have to take it anywhere. You can download AVG and Avast and Panda. Actually, Panda
any one of them
works from the or any one of them or all of them. I don't really care. And do it yourself just before you move those drives over to a new machine.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to take it anywhere. You can do it yourself.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be my next thing. If he's unsure.
Certainly, if you want to pay one of these guys to do it for you, that you know they're happy
unsure
to get your
I thought you might have some program that really does a real thorough job, you know, some special.
No, no. If you got adequate software on there and you've been due diligent in, you know, keeping your machine clean in that, and you're confident that, you know, everything's good there, just like you said, plug in the USBs, run the scans on them, and go from there.
I would honestly dance the entire security tango on all the drives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that takes a while, but
nothing ever pops up.
Which is good.
That's a good thing. The important thing. That's what you want. No news is good news.
Mm-hmm.
But it does do some strange things. Like when I go to shut it down, it'll say, you know, that it's updating Microsoft. All right? I think it's 4 updates it's got to do. If I shut it off and then turn it back on again, play for about 5 seconds or 10 seconds, and shut it off, it'll want to update those 4 again.
Well, until it updates them, it's going to have that in the background always.
It may not have finished
so
updating
them. So you need to be more patient.
Well, even if I run for a couple hours and then shut down and do it, you know, it does it every time.
And that may be a problem in the registry.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you've already moved everything over to a machine, then you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, okay.
So that one could be just something you'll never see again when you move to the new machine. But still, just before you move them over, dance the security tango on each of the additional drives.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
All righty. Thanks.
Mm.
And, of course, the security tango is at securitytango.com.
A lot of times viruses hide in backup files. You can get infected with a virus or malware that hasn't triggered yet. A lot of programs will have a trigger date, so they just propagate until some certain date and then trigger. The Michelangelo virus was one of the first ones to popularize that. So you may have had it in your computer for 6 months, but it hasn't triggered yet. So then it's in all of your backup files. So when it does trigger and you think you erase your hard drive and restore from backup, you restored the virus again too.
Yep. All right, I think we've got time for a quick news story. The Justice Department has warned Apple and 5 major publishers that it plans to sue them for price-fixing ebooks. The antitrust lawsuit alleges Apple and 5 publishers, including HarperCollins, Hachette Book Group, Macmillan, Penguin Group, and Simon & Schuster, colluded to fix ebook prices. Some of those publishers have already moved to settlement discussions with the government before any such suit could be filed, in the hopes of avoiding a public fight. At stake is Apple's signature agency pricing model. When the iPad was originally released, Apple introduced a pricing model with major publishers that allows publishers to set prices. In this model, publishers set fixed prices across all e-bookstores, and retailers get a fixed percentage of those sales. In contrast, Amazon takes pricing decisions out of the publisher's hands. The Department of Justice's concern is that this fixed pricing model, adopted by 5 of the 6 big publishers, has reduced competition in the ebook industry and raised ebook prices for consumers. Following the dead tree book model, ebooks were traditionally sold to retailers under a wholesale model. Wholesale model for electrons. Publishers and retailers negotiated a fixed cost per unit. Retailers are then free to charge customers whatever they like. But wholesale pricing causes 2 problems for publishers. It gives the market leaders, Amazon, a disproportionate negotiating power and makes it possible to use heavily discounted ebooks to boost sales figures, capture market share, and sharply undercut sales of printed books. That's when the late Steve Jobs, then chief executive of Apple, introduced the agency model under which publishers set book prices and Apple takes a 30% cut. Apple also stipulated that publishers couldn't let rival retailers sell the same book at a lower price, hence the price-fixing lawsuit. I said that when it first came out, didn't I? There's a lawsuit waiting to happen. That's price fixing. Publishers will likely want to reach a settlement soon, which may involve modifying or completely eliminating the agency model. It's too early to tell what a settlement might look like for consumers, but it's likely to translate to lower ebook prices. Thank you. How do you feel about the price of ebooks? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it was interesting that before Apple, Amazon set the price of the book, didn't matter what the publisher wanted, and Amazon took 70% of the fee, didn't matter what the publisher wanted. Then Apple came along and let the publisher decide everything, and they only took 30%, and Amazon cried foul.
Right.
Because it from Amazon's point of view, that was bad.
Well, yes, but the reality is that if Apple is telling you as a publisher This is the least amount of money you can charge for this ebook everywhere. That's price fixing. That's price fixing.
Yeah, but it wasn't exactly Apple setting the price. It was Apple saying, if you sell it at this price from us, you can't sell it cheaper somewhere else.
That's still price fixing. It doesn't matter what the price is and who sets the price. Saying to somebody you can't set it for somebody else different from what you set it for us, lower, that's price fixing. And the Department of Justice is finally waking up to that. So we'll see where that goes. The real problem, I think, is that
talk to Walmart.
Exactly.
Walmart sets the price that you have to sell it at, and they tell you how much profit they're going to give you.
Well, exactly. But that's, again, a different lawsuit if the Department of Justice wants to bring that one. Just because Walmart does it, trust me, doesn't make it right. So I'm actually glad to see this. I'm glad to see that the government is waking up and seeing what this all means.
And from a
I don't see any reason. Are you okay? Are you just massaging yourself?
Or no, I'm worried that this chair is coming apart.
Well, if you're going to swiggle on it like that, it's going to go. Yes.
No, it's
yes.
Just sitting on it, all of a sudden I go shifting.
Maybe you ought to go talk to somebody who understands woodworking and what happens when you wiggle two pieces of wood that are screwed together.
He's going to make fire. He's got fire and methane. Yeah. We'll have an explosion.
Exactly.
No, I think this chair is going to go home with me, and I'm going to re-glue it up, or I'm bringing the clamps in Thursday night.
Oh, you like the clamps anyway, you know.
Yeah, I do.
I'm sure you do. But, yeah, so I'm actually kind of excited if this ends up being lower ebook prices. I continue to be a little porked off about the fact that a $6.99 or $7.99 paperback, I pay $6.99 or $7.99 for the ebook when there's no paper, no shipping, no warehousing, no middleman.
Yeah. At least it's less than the $35 for the hardcover.
Sometimes it isn't.
Sometimes
it isn't. And there's no reason for that book to cost that much money. I know everybody wants to get as much money as they possibly can out of me, but I want to save as much money as I possibly can. So I tend to shop at the e-tailers,
or
as
go to the library,
called, that are cheaper. And you can borrow books from the library now on an awful lot of e-book readers. So that's pretty nice. I have to say, that I'm looking forward to that. It should be a pretty good deal. So that'll be nice. If you're an e-book reader, not the actual device, but one who reads e-books, give us a call and let us know what you think. Again, that's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-415.
I've been going through the Bain Free Library of sci-fi books. Great. I got into the Honor Harrington series by David Weber.
Yep.
And there's 10 or 11 books in the series, and there's more coming. So that's one of the good things about reading a series from an author that's still alive. There's more coming.
Yeah, exactly. And you should put that link online, the Bain Free Library, if you're an e-book reader person. And you like science fiction, it's tough to beat the Bain Free Library. What he did was he went to some very, very well-known authors and convinced them that they've made all the money they really deserve to make from that particular book, and they should now offer it free. So if you're a science fiction reader, that's an awfully good site to go to. We, on the other hand, are going to take a quick break. You've wasted an hour of your life listening to us, and if you're at the pancake breakfast, you're full and ready to go home. Anyway, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Double Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still?
Still. Unbelievable, isn't it?
You know what?
We have a whole nother hour of this nonsense.
Before we get into all that stuff, we should be mentioning a couple of things that we got coming up. One.
Well, let's look backwards before we look forwards and thank everybody one last time.
Go for it.
For joining us today at the Pancake Breakfast. It was way fun. Catching up with some people, talking to old friends, meeting new friends. It was great.
Well, we got a couple things coming up. One, the open house is going to be next Friday.
And that's always a fun time.
Yep, and that's from 5 to 7 here, again, at Grease Olympia High School, 1139 Maiden Lane.
Come and wander through the Palatial Studios.
Yep.
We'll have guides and a golf cart so you don't get lost.
Now they're going to have some special gifts if you come in and renew your membership. And like I say, you can see our vast library, where this all takes place and everything else going on. And then we've got in April, the Soho Show coming up. So, you know, that's going to be, again, that is April 5th, which, again, is not that far away where the three of us. And you won't have to go looking for a phone, though, this year, unlike the
I don't have to go looking for one, now.
But we can always be enticed to venture out and see what's
there.
But we're there from 9 to 4:30 at the Soho. That's a small office
small office, home office.
And it's geared towards employers with, say, 30 employees or less. So, you know, it's a great place to come out and get
30 employees or fewer.
Yep.
Sorry. Yes, it's a great place to come out. It's a good place to network. It's great to see the people. Stop by the booth and shake our hands.
Well, we were having fun with that. What was it? That rocket launcher?
Yeah, the USB missile launcher. I might have to bring it again.
Yes, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
I'll bring the laser cat toy, too.
They have one that connects to the iPad now.
So directly? Because I control it from my iPad, but it connected to the computer.
No, it's wireless.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
There you go. Now you're
wireless.
Talking.
So now you folks are going to have to come down and at least check that out.
Steve's looking already. You know what I really want?
Hmm.
They have a little helium dirigible that looks like a shark.
Clownfish and shark, yep.
Ooh. And it just floats through the air. I want. That's what I want.
Well, I
want
to get one of those little helicopters.
That.
Get one
today
of those,
is my half birthday.
So you're going to get half a present.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you get a half birthday?
It's 6 months till my birthday. See, yesterday was my daughter's birthday. My daughter is 20 years old. God, I'm old.
Dude, I still remember the day you took off.
Yeah, I remember the day I took off. But you know what?
It just seems like yesterday. Though.
Right. The thing is that her birthday is the day before my half birthday, which... basically, she wants me to forget when it's her birthday and remember when it's my birthday. Oh, and it's Amelia's half birthday, so we have to get a present for her, too. That's how that works. I don't get a present today. She gets a present in 6 months. That's how that works.
With kids, you know,
that's how that's always worked.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Greece.
Yeah, this is Joe from Greece again.
The same
I
one?
I about the problem with AOL on
yep.
the fonts.
Yep.
I found the setting, and I changed it from 10 to 12, and I put save, and now I got a runtime error. This application has requested the runtime be terminated in an unusual way. Please contact the applicant support team for more information. And, you know, I restarted the program and done everything, and I can't get past it.
You've really got to talk to the AOL people now. I have no idea why changing the font would do that.
I can't get on to AOL.
You can still get on AOL through your web browser.
I tried. I got a shortcut for Roadrunner. I get the same thing.
Open your web browser. Open Internet Explorer or Firefox. Don't open the AOL program.
I don't know how to do that.
Go to your start menu, choose programs, and pick Internet Explorer.
He might not have AOL installed. He might be going through the Internet Explorer.
No, he said he was using the AOL Desktop 9.
Oh, okay.
I did see there's a 9.6 available.
You know how to open your web browser, yes?
No.
Have you ever gone to a web page on the Internet?
Yeah, only to AOL.
Okay.
You can use
other programs to do that. You should have one called Internet Explorer. It might even be on your desktop, a big blue E.
Or if not, it's in your start menu under programs.
Start on programs.
Yeah.
All programs, Internet Explorer, I got it.
There you go. You can double-click on that, and it should open up and probably bring you to Microsoft's homepage.
Okay, all right.
In the little box near the top, right across the top, where it probably says www.microsoft.com, you can erase all of that and put in www.aol.com.
Okay.
And...
Well, they brought me to Roadrunner. Put it in Microsoft or
that's AOL. Fine. Same thing. You can wherever it took you. You can put in AOL.com. That will take you to AOL, and then you can somewhere on that page, probably along the bottom, you'll find a contact us link
or help or something like that.
Help, contact us, trouble tickets, help desk. So it'll say some word like that.
Could I go back and redo from yesterday's menu?
That may or may not work. It can't hurt to try.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Sorry to bother you.
No, not a problem.
Bye-bye.
He may have a corrupt font if that happened.
Yeah.
That's
one of the problems when he tried to change the font and he ended up with a problem with the program, and now it won't reboot. I don't know what else to say about that. I mean, that theoretically, of course, shouldn't happen to begin with, obviously. And the fact that it did, that's the AOL technicians are going to really need to fix that. I
keep wondering why they're bothering with the standalone AOL program when it's 99% of everything is on the web already.
Well, the
it's still for dial-up. If you're still using dial-up, you need AOL as your dialer. But they could set up the Microsoft dialer for that if they wanted to.
Right.
It's probably that control issue. It's their program. They can control everything on it.
Well, and you know, back in the day, frankly, AOL's online stuff stunk. And their standalone program was marginally better. And if you started with that and kept with it over the years...
Yeah, nice big icons to click to go to this place and that place. Yeah,
exactly. All right, our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hello, gentlemen. I've got two computers, two PCs. One is XP and one is Windows 7. Windows 7 64-bit. The XP machine has PowerPoint 2007, and the Windows 7 machine has 2010. They're both valid versions. I paid for them. And when I put them on, just now come together through a regular router, and you know, because I move PowerPoint files between machines for work, and every once in a while, the Windows 7 machine, the PowerPoint says, it just crashes PowerPoint, and it says unexpectedly.
Yep.
I call...
I'd hate to have an expected error.
Yeah, right.
yeah, exactly. So I've uninstalled PowerPoint, reinstalled. I've called Dell. They're both Dell machines. They went through and, you know, did reinstallations on from their tech side. Is there a reason why a PowerPoint on a 64-bit machine would corrupt if you're moving like the same file between two computers?
Well, it probably didn't corrupt it. What likely happened is, there are two formats that you can say, well, there are multiple formats, but there are two important formats that you can save your files in. One is the old version, which is perfectly readable by old versions of Windows, and there is the newer version that is not always compatible with older versions of the software.
Yeah, the old version is PPT, and the new version is PPTX.
Right, yeah, right. But Windows, the XP machine, which has got PowerPoint 07, always works. It's always the new machine, the Windows 7 machine with PowerPoint 2010 that always crashes.
Oh, so, going the other way. Interesting.
Is it the 32-bit version of Office 2010 or the 64-bit version?
It's the 64-bit Windows 7 and PowerPoint 2010.
Yeah, but is PowerPoint 32-bit or 64-bit? See, that matters.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Thank you. Actually, Steve asked it. Why am I saying thank you?
You may have the 64-bit OS, but you also should have the 64-bit program.
Right. One of the problems with 64-bit in general is that running 32-bit program, and I don't care what your operating system is, because I have the same problem with Linux 64-bit.
For Microsoft, by default, Microsoft Office 2010 installs the 32-bit version of Office 2010, even if your computer is running 64-bit Windows.
Microsoft is idiots. I'm sorry, go ahead. You were saying?
I'm trying to see if there's a fix for it.
Yeah. So that
outside of buying 64-bit 2010...
Well, you want to make sure that if you have a 64-bit version of the operating system, all the software is also 64-bit.
Apparently,
otherwise it's very inefficient, and you might as well not have bothered to buy a 64-bit operating system.
Apparently, they're both on the same install disks, but you have to specifically pick the 64-bit installer on your install disk. If you just run the regular installer, it does 32-bit. I'll post this link.
So, yeah, maybe what you need to do at this point is uninstall PowerPoint one more time, install it one more time, and pay attention to the screens and make sure you're installing the 64-bit version.
There's an option. I didn't realize there was a...
No, there's not an option. There is not an option. You have to specifically run the 64-bit installer off the CD.
Okay.
The 64-bit installer will be in a different folder.
Okay.
And you have to run that by hand. If you can put in the CD and it comes up with a menu, that will install the 32-bit version. So you want to close that menu and just double-click on it or open up the CD.
There's an X...
Double-click on the file or whatever.
There's an X64 folder, and use the setup.exe in that X64 folder.
There you go.
Good. Okay, great. And I'm presuming that there still isn't a problem if I use regular PowerPoint files between those two computers. If I have to move one... to like the 2010 computer, then if I open it up in PowerPoint 2010, there's no problem between 32 and 64-bit machines.
No, I do that all day long.
Get used, right?
I get files from people all day long that are on 32-bit machines.
Okay.
And I open them up with no problem.
Okay, great.
Okie doke.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Sure. That's one of the tricky things about 64-bit. If you have all 64-bit programs, your machine will run pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any 32-bit programs, you got a problem.
Yeah, it's going to slow down.
It's going to slow down.
Sometimes you don't always have the choice. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that it's just not ready for 64-bit. It's coming. I mean, finally.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been a long time coming, just getting up to 64-bit. Stupid gaming systems now have more.
Now we're gonna go to the 128-bit so we can break the 16 exabyte limit.
Yeah, because we run up against that so often.
We're starting. I've started to see some video installations where they're running into petabytes.
Yeah,
thousands of terabytes. The next prefix is petabyte, so we're getting up in there.
Right, then exabytes, then yottabytes.
Let's see, it's odabyte and then nanabyte, I think.
Can't be nanabyte.
Nanabyte is a serious injury.
I don't know. Anyway,
Dennis Apple, Haysbert. Did IBM Haysbert. Commercial.
Right, exactly. Apple has been denied permission to file a patent infringement lawsuit against Eastman Kodak. You may have heard of both of those companies. By the filmmaker's bankruptcy judge. Judge Alan Gropper, who is presiding over Kodak's Chapter 11 proceedings in Manhattan U.S. District Court, shot down Apple's request on Thursday to sue Kodak for alleging that its digital cameras, digital photo frames, and printers infringe on patents owned by Microsoft by Apple. Cheese and crackers.
They're both suing each other.
Syrup. And neither of them is Microsoft. Yeah. Kodak is looking to sell patents related to its digital imaging products, which in February it stopped production of for as much as $2.6 billion. In court documents, Apple has said it wanted to file a complaint against Kodak with the International Trade Commission as it believed it owns the rights to some of the patents Kodak is looking to sell. Apple may still file a suit with the ITC over Kodak patents dispute, but was looking for the bankruptcy court's permission as a cautionary move. Gropper in Manhattan on Thursday said that he should be the one figuring out Apple and Kodak's patent dispute and not the ITC. Get out of my courtroom. The patent dispute at the center of the planned lawsuit relates to the QuickTake 100 and 150 digital cameras that Kodak manufactured for Apple in the mid-1990s, one of which I still have, actually. a source of multiple suits in the past between Apple, Kodak, and other major tech companies. The ITC ruled in May 2011 that Apple and Research in Motion had not violated Kodak-owned patents pertaining to the way preview photos were displayed on digital devices. In January, Kodak sued Apple and mobile phone maker HTC over claims that the two companies violate its patents due to the way that their smartphones preview and share photos taken. Apple has argued that it has rights to the patent, as the technology defined in the patent was developed when Kodak and Apple were working together on the QuickTake. Kodak has denied Apple's claim to any ownership. Apple said in a court filing that it also planned to seek an injunction against Kodak in federal court. So, do you think Apple should be allowed to sue a bankrupt Kodak? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, of course, at 1-800-790-0415, but that music tells me you shouldn't do it right at this exact second. Actually, you can, and then we'll get you on after the break, but we are going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on the truly great and fully member-supported Jazz 90.1. 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we are talking to Pam from either Avon or Avon, you decide, New York.
Oh, it's Avon.
I know.
Hi.
I have a friend who lives in Avon, and if anybody says Avon, she says, I'm not from England.
Okay, and I don't sell perfume.
Right.
I had a problem this last week. I upgraded downloaded and installed the Avast upgrade.
Yeah.
I've got a Windows 7 32-bit, and everything started to go wonky, so I started putting in repair disks and kept hitting repair, 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 and ended up uninstalling the Avast and then putting on AVG. But when everything shook out after getting it to reboot and everything, I'm getting this message that says NVIDIA Boot Agent 253.0 Media Test Failure, Check Cable, PXE-E61. Now, the computer will boot up. This is a laptop. It's a little MSI laptop. It's 2.5 years into its 3-year warranty. But I'm not. It is booting up, but I keep getting this message on a black screen, you know, when I first booted up.
Is this a Compaq?
A what?
Compaq computer?
No, MSI.
What's MSI? Oh, yeah, they made the, yeah, it's the same thing. Just
different name.
Yeah. Okay, PXE, which is Pixie, is an agent that's used. It boots from the network.
So the error message is correct. You cannot boot from the network because you don't have a net boot server.
Right. And what it sounds like happened is somehow in your BIOS,
it got changed to boot order. Yeah.
So what you need to do is go into the BIOS, which is F2 or F7 or delete or something, depending on which machine you're on. And once you're in the BIOS, which stands for Basic Input Output System, once you're in there,
second tab down.
It depends on who makes your BIOS, but
most of them are pretty standard.
So look for boot up or start up.
Well, no, what it usually does is when you go into it, you go into the second menu, and you're going to see it'll say Boot Sequence.
Or boot order or something like that. Yeah.
And in there is where you can select that you want it to go either the CD drive, and yours might be trying to boot off the network. Just change it to the hard drive.
Yeah, you can move things up and down the list.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
If you find a net boot option, you can often just disable that completely so it will never try.
Okay, so it's not trying to boot from the right place. So
right, it's trying to boot from the network, and it doesn't see a network boot server on your Ethernet cable.
Right now it's trying to do, say, your network, and then the CD-ROM, and then your hard drive. Well, if you select the network, if you select that one, usually there's a down arrow, and it'll let you then, or you hit the plus sign or one of those other things, it'll tell you what to do, and you can select the other device that you actually want to be first.
Okay.
And then quite often I'll put the CD-ROM drive first, because there's usually nothing in that.
Well, except that if you're on a laptop and somebody steals it, they can boot it up with all kinds of software in the CD-ROM drive.
Okay.
And get your stuff a lot easier. If you start it up with the hard drive, then they can't.
Okay.
For a desktop, I almost always say start it up with the CD-ROM. But for laptops, I recommend...
And that's also saying, though, that she passwords protects the BIOS.
Yes, and she should password protect the BIOS. She should password protect her system. On a laptop, you never know who's going to get their hands on it eventually.
Yeah.
And what you've got on it is your business, but you want to keep it your business.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the other thing is, having uninstalled Avast, I put AVG on, and it's not working with Thunderbird. Is that common, or when I went looking, it's...
What version of Thunderbird?
Oh, gee, I don't know.
The latest and greatest?
Latest and greatest, yeah. I keep things safe.
Not that, because I'm running...
It keeps telling me timed out. That's the main thing. It's not... It just beeped at me.
Sounds like it's trying to scan your mail and can't. Yeah, it does look like in the AVG forum and the Thunderbird forums, people are reporting problems.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just something to wait till there's a fix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well,
make sure you're
so
on the latest and greatest of both.
Yeah, I've got... everything's updated, but I was just glad
sometimes
the repair disk worked because the backup didn't work. I kept trying to run the Windows backup program to my external hard drive, and it kept saying all kinds of errors, and so now I just have plain files on there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
Guys, we've enjoyed you for years.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Yeah, that's it happens. You update something and something else. But you know what? We're going to do a little something different now. That music means you know what time it is, kiddies. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake...
Then you're going to need to.
And I'm going to need to today. It is time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wake up, Uncle Dave.
And that's not an easy one today.
You aren't kidding.
All right. Now, what the?
Just keep talking.
Okay.
That's not Uncle Dave.
All righty.
That's Uncle Doctor. So where's Uncle Doctor Dave?
Anyways. Well, you folks know, we've been preaching it for probably umpteen years, that you have to worry about, one, the emails and some of this other stuff, that, you know, there's folks out there that are great at deception.
Yep.
And I mean, right from the emails where you might get it that your bank is trying to tell you to do this and this, right on over to, and this is splattered all over if you take the time to do it, Craigslist. They warn you time and time again on Craigslist to watch out for fraud.
Yep.
Now, a very close friend of mine, again, I don't mention names, was looking for a place, saw this great place, supposedly here in Rochester, and, you know, wrote the person about it, and they said, well, no, we won't tell you the address because we've had so many folks, you know, wanting to... you know, we'll ransack it and that, and we've just had so many problems. First, you got to fill out an application, which credit application, you know, to see if you can get approved, is putting everything on the internet, right down to Social Security number and everything else.
Man.
Which is kind of the stuff you would need to do if you're filling out an apartment rental form. But not on the internet.
I don't care if it's the greatest palace and they want to give it to me for $5 a month. They do not get any of my personal information over the internet. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Give me an address or let me know where we can meet and I'll drop it off. No problem. You name the time and place and I'll be there. But one, to sit there and say, oh no, because I'm sorry. If I give you my name and phone number, you should be able to give me the address, because if you can call me back and I answer, then darn it, you should be able to call me, give me that address so I can go by and look at that place. And then we'll proceed from there. But there's just another big scam, and the same with all in. I've seen folks trying to sell stuff.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of rental apartment scams where they don't own the apartment they're renting out. So you send them the first month's rent, you show up to move in, and there's someone already living there. Yeah.
Along with another one that I heard of, and it's another friend of mine, is the dogs. There's a scam out there that, oh, you want to get in on this particular, they'll put, say, oh, like a Yorkie. Mm-hmm. And you want to go for Yorkies. And there's scam artists, and they'll put pictures out there, real cute pictures. They're all over the web. They just grab one of those and say, all right, well, tell you what, these dogs are only 4 weeks old. To guarantee your dog, send us a deposit. And then we'll make arrangements.
You know,
ahead and give their deposit, and then there's no dog.
Yeah, you can, and it sometimes works well and sometimes does not. But as you know, Google indexes a gazillion images a day.
Mm-hmm.
You can drag an image into the search bar, and Google will see if it can match that image. So if you go to one of these sites mm-hmm. and see an image of a puppy you like, you go ahead and match that image, and it shows up on a different site, the exact picture.
Yeah.
One of those two sites is lying to you.
Oh, to go back on the other, as far as the apartment?
Yeah.
After I told the person, what? They, go to look for it. The webpage is gone.
Yep.
Usually places like Craigslist and eBay, and they find the fraud and remove it fairly quickly. But it's just so common and so fast.
Yes, I mean, they can put stuff up and take stuff down. I've had good luck on Craigslist, but it's nothing.
All of these scams have been around for hundreds of years. It's just now faster and easier to do on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And
it used to be traveling salesmen would show up at your door and sell you fake stuff that never came.
Right.
Yeah, but you just got to be cautious. And like I say, meet the people face to face or talk to them. And, again, nothing through the mail, nothing over the internet.
And that was Craig's point when he created Craigslist, is it's your own local town. In fact, they've made it very difficult to search for things in other towns because they want you to meet face to face and verify the transaction.
Exactly. Like I say, I've had good luck. I've sold a number of items on Craigslist, but it's individuals we set up a time and meet, and then boom.
I had a friend who moved across the country, and she was saying, I'll go on Craigslist. And I essentially told her the same thing. I said, who do you know where you're moving to? Mm-hmm. She named about four or five people. I said, here's what you do. You find some place you think you're going to like. You ask one of them to go look at it.
Or now Google Street View, you can look yourself remotely.
Well, but you want to see what the inside of the apartment looks like.
They can make it look like $1 million on the outside and totally gutted in this inside.
Right. And so she did that, and she said half of them aren't there. Same scam.
Yep.
Half of them don't exist. Or if they, and here's the other thing. For example, my old neighborhood, Leonard Street, I believe it was called, is listed on the maps.
Uh-huh.
You can see Leonard Street on a map. All it is a street sign. That's all it is. There's. I don't know that there's ever been a street there.
Well, going back, though, like you said, you don't know what the inside is like. Well, yeah, and going back in that same token, I had a friend
that
was writing down places.
I was about to say it's off of Farragut, but it isn't, actually.
There's a parking lot at the end of the street.
Yes.
There's no houses on it. There's just a giant parking lot for something.
Yep.
But no, they were going to rent it out and went back there to see the place and show it and that. Like, you want somebody to go in there because when he went in there, some people have broken in, literally ripped the sinks out, the plumbing, everything else. A lot of the copper was gone. Just made a clean getaway because the house was sort of up here and people could park around back and they had a field day. They just ripped out sinks, toilets, all the copper that they could. And took a lot of fixtures, and it's like, well, there you go. And now he had to turn around and spend thousands to get all this repaired. Because they were just ripping stuff out and unbelievable. Right. You know, so
and he's found it on the street map, and you can see that it goes one way into a parking lot. That's the old mattress factory. I don't know what it is now. But the old, go back to the other view, the overhead view. The old map showed it continuing through here.
So it's really not.
And it's just, that would have gone through the middle of a couple of different houses.
And
so.
It looks like there's a pool there, too.
Yeah, and when I lived there, the neighborhood couldn't afford pools.
Bicycle, did you go to school 44?
No, I went to St. Augustine's, thank you very much. I was
good little Catholic
I was a
boy.
GCB, good Catholic boy, absolutely. You never know. Google Street View is better. You can actually see physically what the place looks like. But back in the day,
yeah,
you couldn't see any of that stuff.
Someone had to actually go there.
And even if I show you a house, all you see is the outside. And as Dave said, what if they've ripped out everything from the interior? You need eyes on the ground, and you need somebody you trust to go look at that. She ended up with a great apartment. Of course, she still had a separate problem, which was noisy neighbors.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do you tell that? Unless you actually spend the night there, you don't know what's going on at 2 in the morning. All right, we got time? Yeah, we got a couple of minutes.
Yep. Is this you, Nick?
Is this Tom?
Yeah, hey, Nick, it was great to see you at the Pancake Fundraiser today.
It's great to see you. What's up?
Listen, I always enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I've learned a lot from you guys, even though I'm kind of a dummy. The things I do know is you don't have to type www in. You know, I try to hit people with that as far as I go.
Well,
you know?
Now, Tom, sometimes you do.
But, Dave, you were talking about things stolen out of a house.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can find it, you can buy it cheaper. You buy your own stuff cheaper on the street and get a better price than you originally paid for it.
Yeah.
Good point. Good
Anyhow,
point.
Sick humor, but I always like to hear you guys, and thanks for taking my call, as they say.
Thanks, Tom. We appreciate it.
That's actually one of the, I don't know if tip is the right, the tip for thieves. After you break into a house, wait a couple of weeks for the insurance to get paid and the people to replace it with better stuff, and then you can go steal better stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. Jazz 90.1.
I'm sure the thieves didn't
Greece
need
Olympia
to know that.
Greece Olympia High School, the town of Greece, the city of Rochester, and the entire state of New York, including all right-thinking human beings and other entities throughout the known universe, disavow any understanding or knowledge of Steve Ray. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Thank you, Josh.
90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Unrey.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and Steve from Rochester is on the line. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Oh, hello, guys. I have a computer issue I've had since I got my laptop. It's a Windows 7 64-bit gateway. I bought it actually the day that 7 came out. And it's an internet connection issue. If I connect Wi-Fi at home, don't shut down my computer, take it to some place where I have public Wi-Fi, I can always go to the connect to a network, find another network, and hook in. And then when I come home, it finds my home network, everything is hunky-dory. But if I boot up at a place where there's public Wi-Fi, and then take my computer home, I cannot force it to look for other networks. When I click on connect to a network, it says it's connected to this public and gives me, will not even look for networks in my area. So I can basically I end up having to reboot to get back on the internet.
Right.
Is there a disconnect option in your wireless setup? Maybe you have to force it to disconnect from the network it thinks it's trying to reconnect to.
Well, I mean, across the top it says connect or disconnect, but no, I'm sorry. It doesn't even, if you click on that, it's supposed to give you the list of available Wi-Fi signals. It doesn't even supply a list. It won't I can't force it to give me a list of signals it can find. And I don't know how to force it to do that. I frequently would just, you know, traveling, you know, 10 miles or so, just go to sleep, bring it home, bring it back up again. But it won't, if I have not booted at home to start with, it will not find my, it will not even give me the option to look for another network.
Do you know which Wi-Fi browser you're using? Is it the Microsoft one or the Gateway one? Or maybe even one from the wireless provider?
It's a control panel, all control panel items, network, and serving center. That helps any.
It sounds like it's the Microsoft one. You may need to use the Gateway one then.
Well, in Windows 7, from the start button, you can connect. Hello? Hi, how are you?
Well.
In Windows 7, you can click on the start button and then click on connect to, and there's a show list. You select wireless, and you don't see the list of wireless networks there?
Correct. It does. It basically says it's connected to a home network. And that's all the information it gives you. It will not give you will not populate the list of available signals that I would expect to see.
Is it possible a lot of laptops will have a physical switch on them to turn Wi-Fi on and off to save battery life? Is it possible that's switched
or
off?
Or keystroke FN and
no, say, I mean, I do have that option, but no, it's not on. I mean, it's every time I boot from someplace other than home and come home, I will not search for it. I mean, it's very confusing.
Don't leave home, then.
There you go.
Well, wait a minute.
If I boot at home, it's found my home network already. Then when I go someplace else and come back, it just connects me to my home network. I don't even have to look for it.
Right, but if you open that thing, there's no list of networks there, right?
Correct.
However, in the upper right corner, there's that up and down arrow.
Yeah.
That's the refresh button. Theoretically, if you click that, it re-looks for networks.
Mm-hmm. But that's weird that one's losing it.
But that's I guess that's my issue. It doesn't give me that box. It will not, I mean, I've...
No, it won't give you the list of the available networks?
Right. It basically says it's already connected to this network, and that's it. I cannot force it to repopulate a list of, even give me a list of available networks.
And that refresh button doesn't do anything?
Not even there.
So when you click on it, what happens?
It's not. You said it's not there. It has.
Oh, it's not there?
That's
what it can't not be there. You're looking in the wrong place then.
No, I'm not. I mean, I've done this. When I go to all kinds of these Wi-Fi places, the list is there. I refresh the list.
Yeah.
I find a place. It just that list does not exist if I've booted from a...
When you're at home.
If I booted from home, everything is fine. If I boot from home, I can see the list.
And is this any place you go out or just one specific place?
It's most Wi-Fi places. I go to Barnes & Noble in Greece frequently. And so I'm most aware of it happening there.
Yeah. Well, my thought is that if you find it's one specific place, then you just got to make sure to reboot when you come home. And rebooting is not that big a deal.
No, but it takes a minute.
Yeah. I know. I understand that.
You've got to shut everything down instead of just leaving it open. And
right. What it sounds to me like is, well, no, it can't be. I was going to say it sounds like a registry error, but it can't be that, because if it were that, it would happen all the time.
Mm-hmm. Do you plug an Ethernet wire in when you get home?
No.
It's all wireless.
Because Ethernet would override Wi-Fi.
No, nope, I keep it wireless.
And this is Windows 7?
Correct. Up to date.
And it's got on there discovery of other networks.
Well, this is connect to a network, and if you get the pop-up screen that says currently connected to, and then it gives you the next line populates a list of what's available.
Yeah, connections available. Yeah, in the upper right corner of that
is a little double arrow, and that's refresh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that box. It will not give me that box.
Wow,
that's weird. But yeah, other places you get home, though, you get it in other places.
And if I take it from home to other places, like if I'm sitting at Barnes & Noble, I can do their ATT, I can do Citywide, I can do, you know, there's other signals available. I never have a problem going from home.
Yeah, do you have, well, and this is, I'm grasping at straws now. Have you thought about disabling your security suite or firewall for a moment?
No, I haven't thought of that.
Try that. Obviously, you don't want to leave it disconnected, but it could be there's a glitch. What suite are you using?
I'm not actually using a full suite. I do use Zone Alarm and AVG and things like that, but I don't use a full suite.
Well, just for grins and giggles, turn them off and see if that fixes it.
All right, I can try that.
I certainly, who knows, but... and of course, your wireless network normally works, so it's not like you don't have, it's not like it's a hidden network or any of that nonsense.
Correct, yes.
And it's not like it's too far from the access point.
No, I get really good strong signals, and I'm looking for a way to make it populate a list, and I can't.
Yeah, clicking the refresh button is supposed to do that. So the bigger question is, why is that refresh button missing?
I mean, the whole box is missing.
Right.
Have you tried the internet connection troubleshooter?
Yes. It says it cannot find a network. Can't find a problem. Do you want me to contact the internet? And I said, yeah, I wish you could.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what's a virtual box host? Only network. Is that a...
VirtualBox is a virtualization program from Sun that allows you to run other operating systems inside of your host operating system. That may be the problem. Maybe
if you've got
wrong network connections.
Yeah, do you have VirtualBox running on your system?
I have. When I look at my network and sharing, I have my... Linksys Work Network, and then underneath it, I have listed Unidentified Network, Public Network.
Well, forget that one. I mean, forget it, but you can go in and forget a network. Forget that one. Look and see if you have a program installed called VirtualBox.
Okay.
If so, and you're clearly not using it because you don't know what it is, uninstall it.
Is one of the things it does is install extra network adapters so that virtual machine can get to your real network adapters. And maybe that's getting confused somewhere.
Okay. Is that
where did you see this virtual box host thing?
Where?
Yeah.
When you right click on the troubleshoot or what do they call it? They call it the Open Network and Sharing Center.
Yeah,
check and see if you have
VirtualBox installed. And if you're not using it for anything, uninstall it.
Okay. I did click on the hot link, and it basically says that there is no virtual network available, no virtual access, so I must have it.
Well, yeah, it's got to be attempting to find it, so... look in your startup folder. Yep. Look in all your folders. You know, look in the program list, and in add remove programs. Absolutely, and see if you have VirtualBox and get rid of it.
All right. Can I there's probably no reason I'd need to keep it.
No, and if you want it back, you can reinstall it. But if you're not using it. And it's getting in your way.
Right, yes, I understand.
Get rid of it. All right, listen, we got to go.
Okay, thank you very much for your time.
No, my pleasure. Good luck with that. We're done for another week. You've clearly wasted 2 hours of your life. And those of you who joined us this morning at the Pancake Breakfast wasted many more hours than that, but it was great food, great company. We had a terrific time. Thank you all so much for listening to us for the last couple of hours. We will be back next Saturday, whether you like it or not. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you will be doing the fundraising business. Stay tuned. George is in. He's going to be brilliant, as he always is. And we'll be, and Linda's here to keep him in line. She's got the brick. She's going to hit him upside the head if she needs to. We'll be back next Saturday with more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.